pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Welcome to Declarations of War, Eve's longest-running podcast, episode 274. I am your host, NAR CEO Alexei Card, joined by my faithful co-host, former NAR director and CEO of Collusion, Zero Cool.
Hello, hello.
This is Declarations of War, where we discuss Eve, PvP, and politics with a mercenary perspective. And today we have a very special message from a sponsor. Yes, that's right. This is a sponsored episode of Declarations of War. I'm here to talk to you about the Caldari One Corporation. That is Caldari One, the number. Guys, you got to hook up with these people. Obviously, it's hard times out there. I know everyone's struggling. We've got inflation. We need some deflation. There could be a reflation of some kind, Zero.
Yes, yes, this is true.
It's possible. We've had economic experts come on, and there's woe and doom and gloom on the horizon, possibly. And as such, the Caldari state is offering very generous PPP loans, and the Caldari One Corporation is here to help you get your fair share of that money. Got to get these paychecks to the impoverished capsuleers out there. Caldari One is offering a 10 million ISK first-time ship buyer tax credit. Have you always wanted to fly a ship, Zero?
A 10 million, that's ridiculous. I mean, I personally have looked forward to the day I can afford to fly a ship, yes.
It's been a lifelong dream of many of our listeners, and now Caldari One can give you 10 million ISK towards your first attempt to do that. And they've got some great returns so far as well. Caldari One is showing a 300% increase in new pilot profits who have joined this corporation and taken part of their services and taken part in their tax credits, taken part in their forced work labor camps. Maybe we don't talk about that so much. I think that was crossed out in the ad copy that I got. maybe shouldn't have said that, but nevertheless, your information is already on file. The Caldari state knows everything there is to know about you already, so applying couldn't be easier. You just have to put your application into the corporation. That is Caldari space and then the number one. Your application will be instantly accepted. No interview required. They've monitored every email you've ever sent, and they're confident that they're going to give you that money.
I've heard, Alec, that there's new technology being worked on that, you know, they don't even need you to apply soon. They'll just know you're about to, and automatically you'll be in the corp just by thinking about it. But until then, I think you still have to apply, right?
Temporarily, yes. This is a feature that CCP has not implemented into the game yet, but we're working on it. And certainly the Caldari state would love to have that kind of feature. It's been in their little things request to CCP developers for some time. They'd like to just automatically enroll all their citizens in the corporation of the state's choosing. And you know, folks, someday we might get there. But if you want to have a 10 million ISK first-time ship buyer tax credit, a 300% increase in your profits, an instantly accepted interview, standings boosting, drug boosting, every kind of boosting you can imagine, you want to talk to Caldari One. And we thank you for their sponsorship of Declarations of War. Into our main stories. We've got a number of contract updates and a lot of things heating up in NullSec in very surprising places. And of course, a big comeuppance to some of our friends in the professional war decking community. But first, some contracts for Noir. I've got three to talk about. One's going to be a fast one. Not this one, but one of the later ones. We took a wormhole eviction contract. Haven't done one of these in quite a while. No citadels. Surprisingly, this target lived out of a POS. Still, in 2024. But we're like, oh, all right. So, took a look at the fit. Half the electronic warfare modules were not online. So I figure we'll just take a big pile of bombers and a big pile of marauders, and we'll get to work. Man, I forgot how much POS guns hurt. Because I could not tank it in my marauder. I had a Kronos. The Bastion Reaper's going, and I had to warp off in structure at one point.
Ouch.
It's a little hair raising, considering. I don't know if I would have lived that down to have a large Poss kill one of my Chronoses. But it came close. I think I was down to maybe a third structure before I was able to get out. And it did pop, I want to say, about 2 to 3 bombers before we managed to declaw it enough sufficiently. So it was definitely a tough old bird. A lot harder than I remembered it being. And it's been ages since I've had to hit one. But we did take it out eventually. Once we got the first couple guns down, things calmed down considerably. And luckily it didn't have all its hardeners on, so we hit it, no problem. Then we had to get rid of all the Pocos, also no problem. Came back for the Poss fight itself. We weren't sure if there was going to be a fight or not, because this guy had logged in, at times, up to 7 characters. We were pretty sure it was a one-man corporation, might have been 2. But he was able to multi-box several accounts. Lokis we saw, Praxis, Lashax. Nothing ever wound up taking the field. And he managed to get most of his stuff out from what we could tell. We picked up about 500 mil in loot, I believe, out of the Poss of various PI products and things like that. But yeah, definitely a weird little contract. A lot of anticipation, and the easy part turned out to be the hard part, and the hard part turned out to be the easy part.
What kind of Wimble was this, Alec?
I think it was a C2 with a C1 entrance.
Gotcha. Remember, right? Yeah.
But vanilla effects, no special environmental effects or anything like that. Fairly unremarkable hole, really. I don't think this was an attempt from the client to, you know, move in. I think they just really didn't like this guy.
Oh.
But, yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes. You piss people off enough, especially in wormhole space, and get the opportunity to really hurt you. Though, like I said, it seems like this guy's evac operations did okay. We had kept camps on the hole, so I don't think he managed to get a lot out of the hole itself. But it seems like he managed to log off with most of his valuables, and I'm sure he's extracted them by now. Our big campaign was a contract down in the Amar Mimitar Militia Warzone, which we haven't been to since the new Faction Warfare patch. We got hired to take on the local LP farmers, the Seagulls, the Multiboxers.
Ah.
So we targeted Angel Cartel. We moved down ships I thought would be effective. You know, I'm taking a look at the killboard, seeing what these multi-boxers use, taking a look at the fits, mathing out different strategies, and you know, I figured it'd be a fairly straightforward contract. A lot of these guys use drone swarm comps like Algoses and Vexers. They're multi-boxing, they're pretty much AFK farming a lot of these sites. I figured we'd just run in there with some smart bombs or some sniper destroyers and call it a day. Oh no. Zero, I gotta tell you, this is one of the hardest contracts we've done in a long time.
Okay.
Yeah, not pretty. We ended up doing about 8 billion ISK in damage across the entire week. Doesn't, of course, account for the amount of LP that we cost the targets. But we did it with about a 50% efficiency. We took a ton of losses on this contract. Smart bombing worked once. And then the multi-boxers like unlocked Super Saiyan 2 and 3. And just they went from onlining like 8 accounts, 10 accounts to run the sites, to those 8 or 10 accounts, another 8 or 10 Nagas, and then another 10 mix of jump destroyers and Vargers, and they were throwing everything. At one point, the guy was running about 25, 27 accounts at the same time. Like, what the fuck? Got 3 or 4 guys. What can we do here? So we really struggled to figure out tactics that would work. But ultimately, we wound up working the best. It's ironically, just having really, really fast frigates against the destroyers. Even though Algoses get a speed bonus to their drones, if you are close to the max speed of the drone, you can actually drastically cut the DPS down. Drastically. The drones will catch up with you, give you a glancing blow, then stop effectively, reactivate their micro warp drives, and have to catch back up with you all over again. So if you're going above about 5K a second, it was effective to have crows or similar long-range frigates just orbiting their algo swarm in relatively perfect safety, as long as you could ensure that they didn't have a rapier or a Hugin in the area, which they did oftentimes, but you could also damp or jam that out. And we would just try that, and remarkably, it worked. So shout-outs to iMantis and Arcadis for theorycrafting and stress-testing that tactic. We should have gone with it at the beginning. It would have been cheaper and more effective. I didn't think it would work, given how, you know, the way their setup was, but mechanics bore out, and yeah, it was good at the end. It was quite the struggle to get there. The local multiboxers started cooperating against us, like I said, logging in well over 20 accounts, at least 2/3 of which were dedicated just to preventing us from killing the 1/3 that was running the site. And we would have all sorts of station campy games. Then we tried to bomb them, and so they made all these perches so they wouldn't warp directly to anything. It was very much a tit-for-tat evolution of tactics and fits on both sides. And yeah, it was a dogfight. Hard.
It kind of reminds me of my experience of Poshven the second half of last year, where, you know, every tactic that we came up with to beat the multiboxers, they would come up with a counter, but often their counter was, I'll just log in another 9 accounts. So in the end, we'd end up with, like, you know, 27 chips mixture of, say, I don't know, bar guests against us, maybe Eoses, maybe Ishtars, other things as well, Kronoses, whatever. But they would log in like 9 of each, you know, and kind of run one guy running like kind of 3 fleets of 10, so say 27 to 30 ships or whatever, plus, you know, cloaked dictas everywhere and things in Posh.
That's exactly what it was.
It's like a multi-box in arms race.
We thought it would just be one or two multi-boxers, like I said, but they started working together. It's hard to tell with the multi-boxer players how many individual people we were fighting. It could not have been more than 4, but I'm pretty sure it was at least 2. Somewhere in the 2 to 4 player range, but I think we faced regularly on a daily basis well over 40 to 50 accounts. And when your fleet size is, you know, on the average day, 3 to 7 or 8, then if you plan for an op, you can maybe get 10, 15, 20. Yeah, that's hard.
So I've seen posts on Reddit about the multi-boxer problem a lot. And when I sort of dig into these posts, it seems that faction warfare and seagulling and farming is often what is being referred to. So is it just sort of outcompeting the average single player or, you know, small group of players? Is that the issue? Are they just farming and devaluing the currency of LP? What is the major issue there?
I think if you just read the posts, it can come across as just devaluing the currency, which is, you know, easy to dismiss, I think, as a criticism. But I think having observed it as a contract-related problem that we have to solve and just, like, immersing ourselves in it for a week, I'd have to say the issue is a little more insidious than that in a way that people don't necessarily describe when they talk about it on Reddit. And I think the issue is not only are they devaluing the LP, but essentially the way that botting devalues ISK by having inhuman amounts of EVE character power behind this. They're running these sites in ways that groups of players would struggle to do. They're running them extremely quickly. All of the LP is getting shunted to one person. And yeah, that part is a problem.
I see.
But when you actually look at the mechanics of how this goes, as soon as one of the new sites spawns, they are on it within 5 minutes. And they'll play that way. I mean, they're not bots, like, because, you know, we fought them. I know that they're not bots. But it is almost robotic in how quickly they get on them and for how long they play. We're talking across the 2 time zones, usually, well into the late night U.S. time zone. So effectively, they take every mining site, every ice heist, all the high-end things, some of the opens. So if you're a regular player and you want to run one of those sites, the chances of you actually seeing it in time and getting there and getting involved drastically go down. And we didn't personally witness this at the time, mostly because we were just trying to shoot them straight away anyway. But it seemed like if you weren't a botter player, or excuse me, a multi-boxer player, there's a fair chance they would just shoot you out of the site themselves so that they could fully own and monopolize that money. So it is not just LP devaluing, but it's also content denial to regular players getting totally locked out of, I'd say, a little bit less than half of the relevant content for the insurgencies.
And it's mainly these high value sites then, so like the equivalent of battlefields then, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they spawn every 30 minutes or so, which is also something CCP needs to look at. But the overall effect is the insurgency progresses extremely quickly, and only two or three players really get to enjoy most of the high-end, exciting content there. And that's it.
It is similar to the Poshmint situation then. Kind of the same story there, right? But just with different ships and different people, perhaps. Maybe the same multi-boxes, who knows? But generally the same kind of thing. They, as in whoever is running these Poshmint sites, are there before anybody else. They run them before anybody else can get there. You know, they lock them out, that kind of thing. And it's kind of a time zone dependent, but it's kind of a routine.
Yeah, it's a little, I don't know. It's definitely a little frustrating. I know as a Galenti militia player up until recently, we can talk about as well. Having the multi-boxers come in to run the battlefield sites was extremely frustrating as well. And for the longest time, they were fairly benign. But then they started AWOXing players as well that came in. I think it's less popular for the battlefield feature because it's harder to maintain standings with the Empire militias. For Garistas, -2 is fine. So if you freshly spool up a character, inject it, etc., you have a lot of leeway to use it to kill other players before it actually boots you out of the militia. You're seeing it with a lot more prevalence in the pirate militias.
I think the thing that frustrates me about it is not multi-boxers kind of solving the sites, right? That's just anyone could do that within the game mechanics. I think the thing that frustrates me is the blue aggression and blue scouting. That's one thing. But the other side of it is being able to play both sides of a coin, or three sides of a coin now in Faction Warfare, right? Where you could have characters in each of the factions, the Pirate or Empire factions, and take advantage of all three elements if you wished. That kind of, if there was a way of solving that. And the final thing I would comment on is, with these multi-boxing comps, you know, I think if you pull it off with great skill, running 15 accounts or whatever, then, you know, great, that's all credit to you. I just think it's less impressive when they use the drone assist feature, and I wish that was adjusted, because, you know, there's no real reason other than, you know, we just want to make it easier on ourselves, whether that be, you know, 15 actual real people flying ships and using drone assist, or one person using it with multi-boxing. I think it's a feature, drone assist, that I know it's been changed in the past, right? Years ago, there was almost an unlimited number of drones that could be assisted to somebody or whatever it was, and it has been drastically reduced. I just think it could be reduced down to, well, non-existence, really. You know, there's no other weapon system that I'm aware of in the game that you can basically say, right, you know, once this one ship aggresses, all the other ships in the fleet are going to shoot it. You know, that's kind of automated too much.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I also think, to credit to the multi-boxers, you know, they had not drone assist comps that they were clearly able to use very well, sniper comps. They had some combined arms ships as well. Like, they would have I think the Hugin was the drone bunny. But they also had a Magus, they had a Varger, a couple ships like that in the mix to spice things up. Saber was roaming around from time to time. So they weren't just brain dead drone assist things that definitely made their lives a lot easier. But they had not drone based comps that they could also work with as a multiboxer. They fervently deny it, but I have a strong feeling at least one of the players involved is input broadcasting, because we caught him saying the same thing in local with all of his characters all at once.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a copy paste. It was instant. 20 different characters said the same thing in local.
That's a tell.
That's a big tell. Yeah. They'll claim they're just using Eve Preview or whatever it's called, which...
And some definitely do, right? Because I've seen the videos.
Yeah, some certainly do, but this guy definitely is using a bit more than that. I don't know if CCP can really do anything about that on a hard mechanics level. Maybe a game mechanics level by changing drone assist makes it more difficult, but as long as you can send the same inputs to multiple clients at the same time, or nearly do so in ways that CCP can't detect, I think we'll always kind of have this problem. It's like Eve's equivalent of wall hacks. Very difficult, apparently, to weed out or aimbotting or you know, name your cheat tool. But yeah, not great to see. And there's definitely a wallet warrior element to this as well. Like leveraging your probably not real money. I'm sure they're making enough ISK that they can plex all of these accounts, but it's verging on a pay to win to be able to run 25, 30 accounts with enough automation to like make that humanly possible, and then just be able to use that against regular ass people that could maybe pay for one account and plex another account and are lucky if they could run both at the same time on their computer, you know? I know it's not exactly pay to win. I'm not saying that, but it has a couple elements of it that make it feel pretty scummy. And last bit, the insurgency spread to HiSec and made an Asbel vulnerable, and we got hired to hit it. Unfortunately, we couldn't close it out before the insurgency itself closed down. But it was wild. We reinforced it, no problem. We came back for the fight. The locals in Edict came to defend. They popped two or three of our Omen Navy issues and forced us off the field, and then lost their entire logistics wing to Concord because the HiSec mechanics are all sorts of weird. When the insurgency comes in, it's supposed to, like the marketing says, oh, it makes insurgency 5 systems feel like NullSec. You can shoot people in HiSec, no Concord, etc. But there actually is some Concord. There's a lot of things you can't do, and very worryingly, there's a lot of things you can do that will then get players concorded if they remote rep you after the fact.
I see.
Which is not made clear in the insurgency documentation, marketing, in-game text, etc. So, yeah, it's a little weird. Remote repping in HiSec is spotty when it comes to the insurgency, and there's a few other things you can't do. Like if you're -5, you still can't go in there. You can't dock still. So it's not doesn't quite feel like NullSec or even like LowSec, even though it is an Insurgency 5 system, Corruption 5 system. So I don't know what the fix is for that. I think just more education or more documentation in the game, making it clear what you could actually do once something gets Insurgency 5 and what's still off-limits probably needed. Not asking for any specific mechanics change, but it's definitely not intuitive for players and can lead to some awkward situations like losing 5 guardians. We then had a big team up with Sedition to reinforce it again. We thought we got a fight again. We didn't. And then the insurgency ended, and that was that. Kind of a bit of a letdown on that contract. But it did transition nicely into our first week of Garistas, which is the last bit of noir news I'll pass on. We have officially entered into the Garista militia. It's been a long time coming. The corps in Templars Chaos have finally got their standing sorted out and all the logistics sorted out. So we're good to go. We've been in Garistas for about 2 days now. unfortunately haven't had the big knockdown, drag out battleship brawl that I really want to have with some of the alliances in there. We looked like we were going to get it yesterday, but then Snuff positioned a Hunter Sino in the gate in between us. We managed to catch it in time. So I turned our battleship fleet around rather than get it hot dropped. But I'm looking forward to that opportunity when we can really cut loose and take one of our high-end doctrines versus Sedition or of Essence with one of their higher-end doctrines and just, you know, friends fight kind of thing.
Yeah.
What's going on with Empyrean and PandaFam, Zero?
So we've got this system, F4R2TAC-Q, right? It's sort of described as something of a junction. Down there in, what is it, Catch? Yeah. And, well, as far as I know, the story goes that, I think it was, Fraternity had a keepstar in that system that they handed over to Pandemic Horde. And then with the drop off of the Southwest Agreement, we have some contesting going on in that area. So Imperium decided to go and drop a Fortizar and taunted the whole of Eve about the fact that nobody came to stop them. There were some accusations of blueballing and being too scared to undock, etc. And this fort, Imperium fort, was on the same grid as this Keepstar. Bit of posturing from both sides then as the week went by, essentially accusing each other of not wanting to fight. And then eventually we ended up with, as far as I know, and I don't know what happened in the end, a big brawl over this Keepstar. And did it go down, Alec?
It did not. The word is, I don't know if this is spin or if it's not spin, but the word is that the attackers gave a pass on this Keepstar so they could take the high sex Satios down, which we'll talk about in a second.
I see. It kind of makes sense. Depends which side of the, donut you want to land on. But yeah, I think this is early posturing, right? Brewing for a bit of a conflict between the two halves of NullSec. That's what everyone is waiting for, right? For the fireworks to really go off and something to happen. But will we see any real fighting between them, aside from these skirmishes, before the big patch, I wonder?
Well, I think this should count as a big fight. Yeah, it didn't die. They skipped out on the big fight, but they had a couple very costly, at least by most sane standards, very costly fights on both sides to try to get it to that point. And the TTT Satios going down is should not be minimized. I know they're high-sec structures, but it was a conflict between NullSec powers, just happened to happen in high-sec. And the death of those structures is very significant because they can't be replaced. CCP has banned XL structures from high-sec. They've grandfathered in ones that already existed, but they can't be put down again. So even if, say, they did kill that Fraternity Keepstar, it is true Fraternity could just throw another one down. And these Satios, that's like a Citadel in Pochvin. Like, it's a unicorn. It's not coming back. So if that was the case and there was time or overlap, I would definitely, if I was in the attacker's position, have gone for the TTT Satios instead of the NullSec Keepstar, because you can come back and hit that Keepstar again next week. You know, that's not going anywhere, and it doesn't, I mean, yeah, it's a huge loss ISK-wise, but it doesn't really matter that much strategically. Fraternity can always throw another one down. They have a very deep war chest. This is hitting your opponents, if successful, in a way they can't heal from, and those Satios are very big money makers for Test, Fraternity, etc. So if you're looking at this from a strategic level, it makes a lot of sense there too to take away their income in a way that they can't get back.
And those Satios lasted a good 9 months post no more XL structures in high sec patch, right? I mean, there must have been some planning around how to get rid of them eventually. I know that on all of these occasions, as far as I know, the defense hasn't been significant. Somehow Imperium have managed to levy, non-attendance from their opponents in the high sec ones. Generally, as far as I can tell, these two Sotils that died, they weren't heavily defended.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess heavily is relative. Fraternity did lose a couple legions, and at least the second one. But it's high sec. You're not going to see the capital, super capital side of things, so the ISK value is going to be low. But Fraternity did commit Marauders. Looks like PanFam committed faction battleships, high-end faction battleships. So it's not like there was nothing, but yeah, it's not going to be as vigorous. It's just hard because you can't put a fax in the field. There's no dreads. You're just trading battleships back and forth, especially at the scale you're talking about with the number of players involved. There's no real logi to be had. You're just trading BS back and forth. And there's only so much of that, and no bubbles, so you can't pin down the entirety of the enemy fleet. There's only so much of that your FC is willing to accept before they're all like, okay, we're clearly losing this fight pacing-wise. Time to warp out.
Yeah, I think what made me curious about the high sec ones was that usual thing of in tie-dye, the timers tick down in real time, whereas the server's running at a snail's pace. But, well, Imperium managed to overcome that, and no more Sotios in Perimeter now? Is that the end of Sotios in Perimeter?
As far as I know. Now, there are definitely trade Sotios elsewhere, but they don't see nearly the same volume. Not even close.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the first Sotios kill mail.
Sometimes they don't spawn, right? But I don't know on this occasion.
I'm sure it's out there, but I only had the second one handy for some reason. But yeah, I would say the defense probably looks a little less rigorous on paper than it may have actually been. But also, as a defender, you can only really do so much. Again, talking about the number. Oh, all right, there we go. I found it. Yeah, I'd say the first one looks like it was defended much less vigorously, ironically.
Yeah.
Pretty much a battle cruiser defense fleet and not a very large one from PanFam. But it looks like the second one, they threw a little bit more IS down on the table. Wild times, though, to see Nullsec empires fighting it out at HighSec is always a bit of a trip because, I don't know, it was just inconceivable a couple years ago.
It just goes to show, right, if you've got that, you know, passive income source available to one side and not the other, they will fight over it.
Indeed. I know we've trended away from passive income as a game mechanic in EVE, but there's no denying it's an attractive thing. People want to have it, and you don't want your opponent to have it. So it is a conflict driver. There's no getting around it. Well, and also related HighSec Citadel news, not directly, but we've mentioned on a couple times on the show that the impact of the TTT, one of the impacts, has been to equip and consolidate the professional war deck alliances of EVE. I'll use professional quite loosely here. The full-time war deck alliances of EVE. One of them is SRS. And continuing the trend that we talked about in the previous show of high-sec war deck alliances getting their HQs attacked, SRS's turn finally came. SRS, at least in my estimation, having interacted with multiples of these groups, although I haven't interacted with SRS recently, I would have to say they are the best, quote-unquote. Not necessarily the largest, but the most organized and most willing to fight of the high-sec war deck groups that I've encountered. And whereas most of the high-sec groups are spamming Astra houses and trying to find ways around them, these guys put down Fortizars as their war HQs and kind of dared people to hit them. We attempted to one time, couldn't do it. This time around, Initiative and Co. came in with a frickin' bulldozer, and yeah, did not go well. There's a really great AAR of everything that Safe has posted onto Reddit called A Very SRS Joke, which is pretty great. And SRS has lost both of their high-sec citadels, the Fortizar War HQs. And yeah, couldn't happen to nicer folks. I got nothing against SRS in particular. They've always been okay whenever I've had to deal with them, but they don't keep good company. And I think the continued attempts, which Zero will talk about in a second, of these groups to skirt the war deck mechanics just continues to really annoy me.
Well, it's not just you, Alec, right? Because there's enough people out there that felt that SRS needed a message.
Well, you'd have to think message received over that. But the sure final kills back. Go to Domain Research and Mining. There are a number of alliances involved in this entire War Deck HQ crusade process. But in terms of this particular one, Domain, I think, brought the heaviest stuff. They brought a nice big Lashak fleet. There's also huge fleets of Fraternity. Test even had a presence here. Synergy of Steel brought a massive fleet. Synergy of Steel brought almost as many people as Fraternity to this campaign, which is crazy to think about. Sin has grown quite a bit since taking up residence in the Northwest. They're almost hit 2,000 members now, which is like pretty wild. And from what I've heard from people, they're actually a very decent alliance. So props to those guys. Props to everybody that took part in that campaign. I wish I could have been there just to, because they'd try to kill those Fortizars before, particularly the one in Ashab. But yeah, that's where we're at. We'll see where this keeps going. So far, it seems like it's going in the direction of the high-sec deck alliances are just trying to do everything they can to avoid the consequences of the bed they've made for themselves over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and it continues, right? I mean, we talked about this last time on the show, the different ways you can exploit these war deck mechanics to get what you want out of them. And there was one way that I forgot to mention last time that I've seen a few times, and it happened again to Eve University last week. So it reminded me that, you know, one of the little tricks. Now, ordinarily, when you declare war on someone, you need a structure, a citadel then, in high-sec, right? It needs to be in high-sec. It doesn't have to be in contiguous high-sec. You can have on a high-sec island, but you need, you know, an Astra House or a Fortizar or something in high-sec anchored online in order to declare war on another group. Well, one of the changes that must have been made years ago to help the defenders against war is that, you know, ordinarily when you hit a structure, you have to wait for the timers between shield and then with the medium structures, the armor and hull are next. And there's usually a few days gap, usually 4 to 5 days gap between the first shield ref and the second timer. And in the case of structures that have 3 timers, you know, you've got another period after that as well. Well, when you're in a war situation, you can hit your attacker's war headquarters. And when you do so, it's only a 24-hour wait then before the next timer. So it effectively, if you're defending against a war in high-sec, you can hit the attacker's structure. And within 24 hours, you can hit it again. And then another 24 hours elapses if you kill it before the war is over. So you're looking at about, you know, 48 hours or more of being, you know, under war conditions. Well, one of the little tricks that these high-sec war corps and alliances use sometimes is they'll actually hit their own structure and put it into armor timer before the war goes live. And what that means is that when the war becomes active, that war HQ has a 5-day timer on it, extending the minimum length of the war then by quite a considerable amount. We're talking 300, maybe 400% increase in the amount of time that they can have you, you know, as a viable target in high-sec, camp you in the Jita, undock, things like that. I think this is, you know, not working as intended, Alec. I don't know. What do you think?
I definitely don't think it's working as intended. Again, I was in the room when the intent of this was figured out, and that was not an easy negotiation to make to strike the right balance between attacker and defender. I wish I'd had the foresight to think of this one. What if people shoot their own structure first? But, you know, this seems like, of all the problems with the War Deck system that have been exposed in recent weeks, maybe months, I don't know, I think it's happening quite recently. It certainly feels like there's momentum forming behind it, but This seems like one of the easiest to fix. Your Wardeck HQ must be online and vulnerable to initiate a Wardeck. You can't have something that's in reinforced mode or low power or abandoned or whatever. Actually, yeah. It has to be a running, fully repaired station to actually declare war against somebody. That seems the most reasonable thing. It seems like something CCP can easily track in terms of the state of the structure. And obviously, if it can't just flick a switch, it would have to be patched in. But it feels like easy to address in a technical way that a lot of the issues with the Wardeck system otherwise are more difficult to address.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that law-wise, or, you know, just it just makes perfect sense, right? Why should you be able to declare war on people if your war headquarters is under siege?
Yeah, I don't get it.
Even if that siege is, you know, self-inflicted.
Even if it's not self-inflicted, it would make sense, right? Why should you be able to take on more wars or initiate more wars if you're on the defense from the war you've currently got? You'd probably successfully defend your station first and then go declare war on more people. Sounds like the war is currently, you know, giving you quite the test, which it should. Like, that's ideally wave a wand, you know. Wardeck should be engaging content. It shouldn't just be an annoyance or a reason for people to log off for a week. You know, you should, as a game designer, and as CCP wants it to have some kind of impact and real meaning and provide gameplay value. Hard to do that with all this shenanigans going on. And with all the loopholes and stuff that they've closed in terms of station games, high-sec remote repair, all the stuff that the safety system is designed to prevent people from getting tricked into doing and getting themselves killed in the war or other high-sec engagement situations. This feels like another extension of that, of the same group of players is just desperately trying to cling on to various mechanic loopholes, most of which are counterintuitive, to maintain an edge on players in high-sec rather than just play. And the sad part is a lot of these groups, SRS in particular, they're good. Some of them can be good PvPers. They can field, they're multi-boxing. We can refer back to the earlier part of the show about that. But, you know, you pretend that they're all human players. It's still a pretty serious sized fleet, you know. 25, 30, 40 Triglavian ships, Marauders, etc. with support. They know how to fly them. They don't need this stuff, but they want to be able to continually war deck alliances that are 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people and stack them on top of each other without consequence. And I think that's where the disconnect is. There is consequence in the system, or there's supposed to be. They're just ducking it.
And it is a shame because, you know, having spent a lot of time with EVE University, the members get quite excited when a war is declared on EVE University. As an example, it's an opportunity for people to come together. Some people become active again because they find high-sec wars fun. And it's a little bit disappointing sometimes when you have to explain to a new player, well, there are no real war targets to shoot necessarily because the war deckers, you know, they're only really interested in camping you and docking out of Jita, for example. And if you go and try and fight them there, they'll probably just dock up because they only want single targets undocking, for example. And you know, there's a bit of a sort of anti-climax then. Because I think if we could make it so that they were fun and engageable, which they could be, and I've been involved in a few that were, you know, sort of like tugs of war between, you know, two groups in a small part of high-sec somewhere, then, yeah, it can be an opportunity to get people interested in PvP more broadly. And some of those players, you know, there's good rates of retention. But most of the wars I've been involved in high-sec with EVE University over the last 12 to 18 months have been a little bit boring, to say the least, because of these sort of, you're just working around the mechanics that they're picking and choosing to their biggest advantage. And generally, it seems that, you know, for the war deckers, they're looking for easy targets and they're just looking for, you know, green killboard opportunities. And that's about it. They're not really interested in anything beyond that.
And most of them will not go more than a couple jumps away from trade hubs. I think Black Flag and SRS have been the most active at roaming afar for at least structure kills. But it's not like they do roaming fleets or anything like that. They get camp and station camp the trade hubs and look for citadels to roll over. And they'll absolutely look for the easiest citadels to roll over. If you're a 5, 6, 7 man corp and you want to own a Raitaru, you're going to get rolled. Don't do it. I can't tell you how many emails I get from players asking for defense contracts against groups like this. And they're small, like under 25 man corps, mostly under 10, or you know, maybe not 10, maybe under 15. But they're like, oh, we just wanted to do our own manufacturing. We just wanted to have a moon to ourselves. We just wanted this. We just wanted that. And these big war deck players are coming in. I'm like, well, yeah. CCP did tell you you'd be war deck eligible when you put this thing down, and this is what that means. They just didn't realize that players would be going out of their way, I guess, to just knock their stuff down for the sake of doing it. But that's the name of the game for these guys. And it's not cost effective for us to spend a week in high sec to deal with it, even if we could. And frankly, you know, I love Noir. I think we are the best mercenary corporation of the game ever. But just sheer size-wise, we can't fight a 40-man fleet of Lashaks and Zernitras, or not Zernitras, the repping ship.
Zarmzeds.
That's just, especially in high sec where we can't bring capitals to bear, like, that's just not a thing. So... And frankly, I don't really know that I'd want to make the organizational changes that would facilitate it becoming a thing. I don't think that would be worth it for us either, just to do it. So it's not the kind of thing Noir could really help you with. And you know, if we can't help you, for the most part, these players have nowhere to go. They're better off just using currently publicly available facilities. But then you also get into the issue of those facilities only being owned by players that can defend them, which against groups like SRS, Black Flag, etc., tend to be the huge NullSec alliances. I think the nice thing is now these NullSec alliances are taking out the war headquarters, which theoretically should take these guys out for an extended period of time where they can't come back and deck all these other small groups that, or at least finish off the citadels of these small groups that they've already attacked, because they've taken on too much of war and they're losing their headquarters. It should give them a 2-week cooldown against everyone they've currently war decked, but it's just not working out that way. Frustrating from a game design perspective. I know CCP is looking at it. I really hope they consider making some changes here, even if it's not something that does dev time, even if they just put out a statement from the GM / community side of things about whether certain things are or not acceptable gameplay mechanics, whether they might be exploits. I don't know if they ever will, but to your point, Zero, it's just not a great gameplay experience.
There's potential there. I think if there could be ways for people to band together a bit more, there are already mechanics for it, right? But I don't know, changes that would encourage players to have one or two little structures in high sec and then, you know, come together as a group to defend them or whatever it may be. Or like you said, just maybe shaving off some of the rough edges around the abuse of some of the mechanics and design features. It would be helpful, perhaps. Nice thing to do.
I will say this, if you're a small corporation and you want to own structures, you want to go to that next gameplay level, it's fine for you to do it. It's not fine for you to do it and complain about it. There are a lot of risks. You should know what they are ahead of time. If you don't, I feel bad for you, but it's a learning lesson. If you still want to get into that gameplay, you have to acknowledge that EVE is a social game where you are playing against other players who have competing interests with you, or maybe they're not directly competing, but they'll negatively impact you. That's just a part of the game. It's one of the best parts about the game. But you've, I think a lot of players that get into this, again, from my handling conversations and emails with these guys for years, I think they feel like Eve is like other games where I could just have my little corner of it, my little instance, and I can have my guild house, and nothing's going to really happen to it. And everyone can have one, and it doesn't really matter. Eve's not quite like that. If you put down a Raitaru, even if there weren't these war deck guys, you're competing against the next door neighbor's Raitaru for business. You know, unless you're friends with them and you've agreed to work together, more than likely they're going to see you as a competitor, and you should see them as a competitor. If you want to get into that level of gameplay where you have a space station that you're running, you need to acknowledge that it's something you'll need to defend, which means you should know who is likely to attack it and what you'd need to, you know, protect yourself against that. And you can absolutely put it down without having made those plans, but more than likely, as soon as it gets noticed, it's going to get rolled over. And I think what that means in total is you should really start thinking about maybe not merging your corporation into another corporation, although I do encourage players to do that, especially if your corp, you know, doesn't really have a strong, unique pitch to bring in new people. If you're an ammo manufacturing corporation, maybe there are other manufacturing corporations you can join instead of trying to recruit players to your five-man corp. Or take your five-man corp, if you have a good, strong sense of identity or a unique pitch, and look at alliances that either could use a corp like yours or are consisting of corps like yours, and try to get in one. Pool your resources together. The more friends and diplomatic contacts that you have, the better, especially when you get into the structure-level gameplay of the game. You need to be able to... You need to be able to make friends in Eve. That's just part of it. It can be a solo game, but especially when you start talking about Citadels, you are talking about a part of the game that is just inherently not soloable. That's my rant on it anyway.
And, you know, the friends you make along the way can be some of the most fun you'll have in the game.
Oh, absolutely. For a lot of veteran players, that is the game practically, in one form or another anyway. But speaking of events, we just want to talk about this because there isn't a lot to really say about it, because something happened, but we don't really know what it means. CCP has had an in-game event related to the new expansion. There was a convoy of clone researchers and geneticists moving from place to place. It was in Galenti space. They got intercepted by Snuff. Some of the locals tried to defend it, more or less unsuccessfully. I think Fraternity did wind up eventually delivering, and a few other smaller groups did get some of the surviving NPC people to where they were supposed to go. We know it has something to do with clones, but that's about it. Zero, am I missing anything on that story?
No, I think it's as vague as you describe. And, you know, I do enjoy this mystery element, you know, the arcs that CCP are, you know, developing. And I'm not always convinced they know exactly the outcome before they start, but that's just a little joke, really. I'm sure they do. It is quite fun for me to, and I'm an optimist, right? So I like to think about the exciting things this could mean, the exciting things that could happen, even though I know that's, you know, if I think too hard about it, I'll probably disappoint myself when it comes out. But, you know, I'm quite easygoing with these things. And just having this lore happening is enough for me. I don't need to know exactly what's going on.
I don't think it should replace patch notes. I like Eve patch notes quite a bit. But I like it as a hype-building tool. It adds a little bit of mystery. It makes the actual release feel like more of an event. And it's fun. It brings people in and... You know, there are some EVE players for whom the lore is a huge piece of the game. So it really speaks to those players and gives them something to talk about publicly on YouTube and Reddit, which hypes the game up and hopefully gets more people involved. But I want to ask you, Zero, what is the optimist inside you saying this might mean?
Well, when I hear about clones, I assume that we're just talking Vanguard, right? That is probably just related to Vanguard. But if I was being optimistic, you know, I've spoken before about ways that carriers could be, you know, levied. They don't really have a role. I would love to see abilities where, you know, you could maybe take 25 pilots with you or 15 pilots with you with your carrier and then deploy them, you know, more than you would normally be able to do just by taking gates or using an anti-blex or whatever. So, for example, if you've got 15 people and you could sort of jump, you know, 5 light years, all of you, through a sino, through a carrier, and then you land somewhere and you all like come out to the carrier in your respective sub-capital ships, that kind of stuff. And one of the underused, I think, mechanics of the game that I, as far as I'm aware, doesn't get used very often at all, is this re-cloning facility that you get, you know, in the supers. I would love to see a little bit more around that. And the mention of clones just makes me think about those dreams. But I don't think that's the case. I think we're just looking at Vanguard-related shenanigans.
I think most of the theories that I've seen discussed are relate to Vanguard, but I think your carrier clone bay, for lack of a better moniker, I think that's one of the more compelling non-Vanguard related theories I've heard. An interesting one that I've heard is possibly using it as some kind of lore vehicle to remove certain skills, like learning skills and other baseline skills that we currently have to train, but are almost taken for granted once you get to a certain point in the game. There's always talk, perennial talk, about how removing those skills would make the game more new player accessible because it would take these baseline, everyone should already have them to 5 skills out, and players wouldn't have to waste time, quote unquote, waste time training into them so they could get to the specialization and some of the sexy stuff, and that might help with retention.
The other thing that was announced in FanFest last time was this idea that they would rework the skill learning attributes. So potentially removing those, I think, was the hint. You know, at the moment, you've got the 5, you've got willpower, perception, memory, etc. And it's very confusing, isn't it, for new players? And I know it was very confusing for me. You know, do you remap your clone? You know, what is all of this about? You know, and for me, there was a bit of like hesitation to touch any of that because I thought, no, it's just too complicated. I don't want a, you know, a 12-month long skill plan that's optimized so that I can get, you know, shave 3 days off my training program or something, and not have that flexibility. And I think, you know, some of those sort of more legacy elements of the game could also do with, you know, being shelved. I mean, to be honest, I don't really see any great value in the 5 different attributes. And I think you could just streamline it into 1 or 2, or you know, just stick to the whole, like, a cerebral accelerator will just increase your overall, you know, learning speed by 3 rather than 3 on each of the 5. Things like that are, you know, definitely they were in the planning stage when the last FanFest presentations were going on. And I think linked in with that was the UI, that, you know, there would be a new UI coming up. And I know that that was sort of, there were sneak previews of that, I think, in one of the events recently. So it would be great if in the summer we see some of these changes along with the patch for NullSec content.
Well, I'm very hyped for that NullSec content too. It should be interesting. Moving into the host highlights, and speaking of something else CCP needs to tweak, I used a Vorton projector. I sunk all the skills into them because I thought they looked really cool. I had yet to actually use one for reals outside of Alliance tournament practice. This is the primary weapon system of the Edencom ships, and it's super cool. It's a chain lightning weapon. You shoot one target, and then it hits up to 10 other targets within 10 kilometers with the same hit. Could be fun, right? I know Bjorn B has put out some really great YouTube content around mass fleets of these things, just totally decimating NullSec gangs. But as a solo player, I was like, eh. But at the same time, this farmer contract, I was like, well, if we're using fast frigates, crows are kind of working. I looked at the DPS of the Crow and the DPS of the Skybreaker. It wasn't that far off. It's like only off by maybe 10 or so. So I thought, okay, this kind of makes sense. If I use snake implants, I could get it up to maybe the speed where it needs to be. So I hopped in one. I sunk about 300 mil to get it from Amar, which is the part that they need to tweak. The price for Edencom ships is bonkers. I get that they can be scary at scale, and that's one reason why you might want to price gate them, but they just don't make sense. Even if you had 30 or 40 of them, you could just have 30 or 40 marauders, you know, be fine. They need to come down a little bit. There's no way the frigate fully fit should cost 10 times more than any other frigate. More than 10 times, really. 15 to 20 times. It's just not worth it. But I really wanted to try it. So I grabbed it, took it in to fight an Algos fleet, and ran into two things. One, the Vorton projector weapon is cool. There's no getting around that. It was effective against the fleet that I took it in. Didn't actually get a kill with it, but I shredded shields pretty fast. Unfortunately, in the few other engagements, I wound up doing as much damage to my own fleet, trying to go in for scrams and webs, as the opposing fleet. That was a little bit of a problem. And then the other bit was, even with snake implants, I could not get it fast enough without having to sacrifice the already meager damage that it has to tank the drones in the way that I had described earlier in the show. So I couldn't actually hold on field that long, which was also a little disappointing. But I'd have to say, overall, it was a pleasant experience flying the ship. I could definitely see fleets of these things being interesting and fun to fly in a small gang, but the cost, I think, just doesn't make sense. It's more money than a Garmer, which is itself already a bit overpriced.
I think the price of the frigate especially makes little sense to me, because it's not that impactful that you would have to gate it with such a significant cost, right? I mean, maybe the Thunderchild battleship is fine where it is because it's, you know, a faction pirate slash thing, and it competes price wise for the hull with, you know, other things like marauders and nightmares and things like that. But the smaller ships, you know, come on, it's a little bit excessive. And, you know, not just the cost of the hull, right, but that investment in skill books, they're not cheap. And the skill train and, you know, the ammunition, weapons, and it's all very expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, and I read a Reddit post a couple of weeks ago. I didn't really think about it much until I bought the ship, but there's some bottlenecks in production that account for the vast majority of how much. It's not even so much the ships, it's some of the modules that they use. A Tech 1 damage mod for the Skybreaker is over 20 mil. Costs more to put one damage mod on that ship than it does to buy an assault frigate.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't seem correct. And I think one of the other issues is just a lack of module. Like, they don't have any application modules. The turrets and missile guidance stuff doesn't work for them. It's a turret ship that uses explosive velocity and explosion radius to calculate rather than tracking and SIG.
Yeah.
But as a consequence, the turret stuff doesn't affect it. So it doesn't have a fall off, doesn't have tracking. And your missile guidance stuff doesn't affect it at all because it doesn't have a flight time and it's not a missile. So it's in a weird spot where it just is whatever it is. You can't make them shoot any farther or apply any better, even by sacrificing damage or speed or tank or anything else. So it kind of puts them into this very clear way to fit the ship. So there's really only one way to do it that makes sense. And the damage amounts are so low, you pretty much have to fill your low slots with those expensive damage enhancement modules. There's really nothing else to put in there, because at that point, you might as well hit someone with a piece of paper.
lots of pieces of paper.
I had to put three damage mods in there to get it to compete damage-wise with a crow, a tackle interceptor. Not even the combat interceptor, the tackle interceptor. I couldn't fit a damage control. I couldn't fit a nanofiber. I had to go with these damage mods, or it wouldn't have been even worth thinking about bringing. So yeah, could be some tweaks there on cost. Would love to see a few more fitting options for those ships. They look like they could be fun. I probably will mess around with them a little bit more, but yeah, overall, not super happy with them, just from a design perspective, but it's the chain lightning weapon is inherently fun, so I'm sure I'll figure out a way to use them at some point in the future. Zero, what's your highlight?
So for me, I've been mostly focusing on the tournament again, and I've been touching some grass in real life, but it's underwater grass, right? In my aquarium, I've been, you know, cutting grass and things. But I did find some time to go out with the group of players that I share my living space with. Most of them come from a corp called Court of the Crimson King, which is a reference to King Crimson, the psychedelic rock band from the 60s and 70s. That when I first saw the name of the corp, I thought, oh, I wonder if... No, there's no way that these guys are, you know, referencing some slightly obscure late 60s psychedelic rock band, right? But it turns out that that's exactly what they're doing. They're big fans of music. Anyway, I went out with them and we did some blops from the wormhole. So to do that, we have the nullsec static and we'd roll the nullsec static for a decent, you know, area of nullsec and then take up blops hunters and some blops ships through the wormhole. So there's a 2 million mass or whatever it is, 2000, however you want to describe it, limit on what can pass through the static from a C2 wormhole into nullsec. And it's enough, you know, to get a couple of blobs battleships, maybe three of those, and then some bombers or, you know, tech three cruisers, and go, you know, kind of small gang blobs hunting in nullsec. And we did manage to get a few interesting kills. We, you know, caught an orca that didn't decycle its links in time. And later on then we caught a marauder using the old log-off trap tactic, you know, finding the site that it was running and timing the log off and log in just perfectly so that the person thought that they were safe to undock and go and return to doing their site. And we got a 6-bill marauder kill for our efforts. And yeah, really fun. Something that we've done a few times with EVE University as well, taking out group blops bombers mostly in that case. But yeah, blops in from the wormhole. Highly recommended.
That's something I've always wanted to do. Like, just wormhole a Black Ops fleet in and then base out of whatever system that happens to spawn in. I always thought that would be an interesting idea. Cool to see it actually works.
Yeah. It's the tactic that bombers bar use, right? They basically do the same thing, but with bombers and multiple hunters, I think. But, you know, those are larger numbers, right? And those are people that do it day in, day out. For us, this was more of a let's use bombers today. Let's use blobs today instead of, you know, nano small gang ships.
Mm-hmm. Well, very cool. Shout outs to the Court of the Crimson King.
Oh, they also, a few days later, managed to catch KCLP's Shapshash, or whatever the name of that Alliance tournament ship from the last 80 years. Slightly sad story to read, but Casey explains that essentially, you know, wanted to do solo content in the AT ship and committed to that sort of, you know, I'm going to go out on my own. I'm not going to have, you know, a crazy amount of people backing me up all the time, and ended up with a loss of that AT ship because that group and one or two of their other friends managed to bait and kill the KCLP AT ship with just like three or four of them. Pick their moment just right, I think.
Well, it's a shame that it died, but I got to give mad respect to Casey for like truly soloing around instead of a lot of these fake soloers you see running links and scout alts and all sorts of other stuff to help them out, tackle alts. And then they'll put out a PvP video about all their great solo exploits. I'm like, well, kind of see a couple interceptors in the background. It sure looks like you've got a boost going. Are you soloing or are you small ganging? It's happening.
I think the only consolation for me was that I know the people that killed Casey's AT ship, you know, there was only three or four of them, right? I mean, it wasn't some big blob.
Yeah, that's a good Eve story, I think. Well, speaking of a small elite crew, I want to give a shout out to our Golden Elite supporters on Patreon. Braille, Fate Atreides, Kestrel, Krav, Mark Havoc, Tang Tengu, and Tweak. Thank you guys so, so much for your continued support. I also want to give a shout out to Karth. He's a new recruit in Noir. He's really hit the ground running. He's been a great addition to the Corp. Actually recruited his own dad into the corporation, who is also a stand-up guy. Vakarth in particular, he's been my new League of Legends bro. We've been doing some duoing, we've been doing some ARAM with Terminus. It's been fun on the late nights to kind of hang out with everybody. We've been trying to incorporate some non-EVE games. I think there's some FPSing going on, there's been some poker going on. But definitely great to have Karth around. Good to have another player to play League with, to tolerate my bronzy ways.
For me, I just got to give a nod, really, to the gracious way, I think, that Sedit have handled the unfortunate stream fail that occurred a few days ago. I don't want to draw too much attention to any individuals in this. I did listen to the entirety of the snapshot of the stream that Snuffed Out put out. And essentially, the story goes, a high-ranking Sedit player accidentally, having tested streaming, leaves the stream running. And as a result, you know, somebody from Snuffed, I think, caught wind of this, followed the stream. They managed then to bait and kill a marshal of theirs, which resulted in, you know, a leadership meeting being called at short notice. Said streamer was pulled into the leadership meeting and continued to stream the entirety of the leadership discussing who might be the spy in their group and what to do about it and, you know, how to handle this new Snuffed threat. And towards the end of the recording, you can hear them sort of saying like, oh, I'm being bothered by messages. People are talking about a stream or something. I don't know. And clearly, you know, in the midst of this meeting, very busy, it sounds like they were somewhat ignoring people trying to point out to them that perhaps sneakily with dropping hints that it was, the spy was among us, right? Anyway, I think what I would say about it is, having listened to the recording, what a nice group of leadership people said it have, right? They just seem to stay calm under that pressure, you know, speculated about a few of their own players that might be spies, but also, you know, discredited their own theories as well. Just, you know, what a nice group of people. I think they've come out looking good from this accidental fail.
Yeah, I saw a lot of early comments ragging on them for how stupid did they be to stream their whole stuff. And then people that actually listened to it were like, oh, actually, they're pretty chill guys. If anything, this makes them look better.
And we can all sympathize, right? I mean, anyone who's done any streaming or recording of their own gameplay has always like feared that moment. You're going to record the exact wrong thing or stream the exact wrong thing. I remember when I first started practicing in tournament teams, it was Akbad actually that warned me, Akbad from Noir. He said, be careful with OBS. There's a button right above start recording that says start streaming. Don't be like some of the other people in the past that have accidentally streamed their practice.
Well, shout out to Big K. Well, that's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in our show polls, leave a comment on the episodes, and Noir recruitment is back on. We're now in the Garista's Militia. Man, I cannot tell you how red local looks. It's great. If you want a rich target environment, as well as access to the contract content that we talk about in this show, getting paid to PvP, sometimes exorbitant sums, as one of our players walked away with the Angels Farmer contract. He poured his heart and soul into trying to make that contract work, and he walked away with a multiple billions-isk payout for his troubles. Come hang out with us. Cafe Noir dot, that's cafe space N-O-I-R period. That's our in-game channel. You can find a link to our Discord in there and a lot of people to answer your questions. We'd love to hear from you and see if you're a fit. Wherever you are, whoever you're flying with, good hunting, listeners.